This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know, I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Baby, I'm home.
Well, thank you so much, Parker, and welcome to Time Signatures. I'm your host, Jim Irvin. And today's guest has an incredible story steeped in the history of the blues. In 1979, she and her husband Sanford opened a little place called Rockefeller's in Houston, Texas. Rockefeller's quickly became known as the go-to venue, not only for the blues, but also for jazz, country, and even some rock and roll concert events. But Rockefeller's was just the beginning for our guest. She also started the legendary Gulf Coast Entertainment and developed the business into what has become known for their white glove approach and unyielding attention to detail for their clients. I'm pleased to welcome Susie Kreiner, founder of Rockefeller's and Gulf Coast Entertainment. It's a pleasure to have you. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Irv. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show. I'm really happy to be here. I was just thinking about you're saying I was steeped in the blues, and I have to say I never intended to be in the blues business or even the music business generally, and certainly not to open a nightclub or to go on and make a career out of booking music for 45 plus years, but here I am.
Well, there's a lot to unpack here, and I'm excited to hear some of your stories. But Susie, we have to begin with you. Where did your passion for music come from?
Well, honestly, I had passion for big band music because that was Daddy's favorite, and we had a special place for that in our relationship. I loved listening to it with him. He was a naval officer, and when he came home from duties overseas or out of town, he'd always put the big band music on, and we listened to it together. But as I say, I'm not a musicologist. I'm not a musician beyond fifth grade piano music, but my husband and I were actually involved in renovating an area near downtown in Houston called the Heights in the 70s. Okay. I was in an MBA program, and one of the properties that we were renovating was a beautiful old Beaux-Arts building built in 1928. The architect was Joe Finger, who also designed City Hall here in Houston in 1928. But we thought, what to do with this beautiful building? So I dropped out of the MBA program and helped my husband find a way to make it pay. It seemed to lend itself to being a nightclub. We added some beautiful guitar-shaped or piano-shaped mezzanines between the Corinthian columns. And we thought probably local regional artists would be best there and make the most sense. And it was a time in Texas in 1979 when it was big for Texas blues bands. We had Stevie Ray Vaughan and Lou Ann Barton, the Fabulous Thunderbirds, Marsha Ball, yeah, the Juke Jumper, Fort Worth, and even Pete Mays from Houston. So there was a lot of blues around. So we tried the local talent, but it turned out it wasn't enough to fill the room. And then we needed some big acts. So we went to LA with a little info sheet about Rockefeller's with a pretty photo of the interior. And we had a party at the Beverly Hills Hotel where we networked with as many local managers and agents that we could round up and feed and drink them. Mm-hmm. And we met a number of nice people, one of whom was Sid Seidenberg, who was B.B. King's manager.
Yes.
In those days. And we mentioned to Sid that we thought B.B. King had a crossover audience. And he was playing at J.B.'s Entertainment Center, I think, a black club on the south side of town at the time, I believe. And we convinced him that B.B. could reach a wider audience through our club. And he agreed. He was looking for better venues for his artists, too. And over the years, Rockefeller's had, after in the ensuing years, we had a lot of those artists who appreciated a beautiful venue. We had Ella Fitzgerald and Ray Charles, wow, and Tina Turner, James Brown, and Albert Collins and Bo Diddley and John Lee Hooker, just lots of great blues artists in those days.
Well, Susie, I have to ask you, it's gotten the better of me. I need to find out, who was your first performer and how did that evening go for everybody?
Funny you ask. The first national entertainer you're talking about, aside from the local regional artists, was Jose Feliciano. And Jose, as you know, was blind.
Yes.
But he sensed from us that we were good people. And he realized that we respected him. We paid him in cash before the show. We were respectful of his rider and his person. And I honestly think he went back and spoke to his manager, and the word got around that we were okay kids. I mean, we were just in our 20s. But I think after that, we started getting the calls, would you like to have our artist play your club? But I think that was
very
really
nice.
A major opening for us.
Yeah. And irony of ironies, in 1979, along about November, my family was relocating from Bay City, Michigan, down to El Paso, Texas. So we went right through Houston because we went down to San Antonio and then cut over to Houston and then made the jog over to El Paso, just kind of seeing the sights on our way. But so that first night, you had put in all the work for that big show. Were you excited? Were you nervous? Were you concerned about how the evening would go? How did you feel?
That first, the first night of the club was extremely exciting, of course. I was 7 months pregnant, and I had been unfreighting bar stools all day. And I was really happy that we were open and finally on the road. But if you're asking about the first night we had a national entertainer with a full house, that's when we realized that we really, that there are no problems when you have a full house. And you have Art Pepper and you had four members in the audience, but that's a problem. And that's anxiety producing, but there are no problems when you have a full house. So those were the good nights.
Yeah.
And
indeed.
We had many, 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 many of those. But we also, you know, as Buddy Holly said, jazz is for the stay at homes. And we had some excellent artists there with very small audiences, but it was still worth it. We considered our club a public service in some ways.
Yeah, well, and the thing about your venue, if I'm correct, it looked like it could be a big house. I mean, 325 is not a massive room, but it's not a it's not a teeny room either. What I would consider a very nice, inviting, kind of a homey spot, correct?
It is in a way. Certainly when there's a good crowd in there, it feels great. There are two-story glass windows that we lined with royal blue velvet to help with the acoustic. We did lots of acoustic treatments, but it was a marble floor, it was a marble ceiling, it was plaster walls and Corinthian columns and lots of windows. So the acoustics were excellent for acoustic music. It was a challenge for some of the hard driving rock and roll.
Yeah.
But I'll say we had, maybe 550 people in for a fabulous Thunderbird show, which was really pressing the seams of the building. But if we had 150 people, it felt great for somebody like Leon Redbone or the Chieftains. But for Ella Fitzgerald, it was a respectful crowd of, you know, 326 people. For two shows a night. I should mention, because of the size, many of the artists we had required our having two shows a night.
Sure.
So to make the payroll. Ella was such a wonderful woman, and she would, of course, have two shows, one at 8 and one at 10:30, and or 10 o'clock, I guess. So she'd play from 8 to 9:30, and then we'd say, please, Miss Fitzgerald, you know, rest and relax, towel off. And she said, oh no, honey, these are my fans. I've got to sign their, whatever they have, I've got to sign my their records and sign their autographs. So she didn't take a break. She just went.
Wow.
Her fans went back on stage. What a elegant, beautiful performer.
Great. I want to ask you, Rockefeller's became known as a huge hotspot in Houston, obviously. And you hosted many big names. You've actually named a few of those. I'd love to hear some more of the names of the people that were there. I mean, you had such a great run over that 18 years.
We really did. Well, I mentioned the Fabulous Thunderbirds and Stevie Ray. We had in the blues department, we had Taj Mahal, Jimmy Witherspoon, Sun Seals, Gin Room Full of Blues, Albert Collins, Tina Turner, Albert King, B.B. King many times. I guess we had him 30 or 40 shows.
Wow.
He would play five nights twice a year, two shows a night for 4 or 5 years there. We had Bo Diddley, Buddy Guy and Junior Wells, Willie Dixon, Gate Mouth, Roy Buchanan. I mentioned John Lee Hooker, Coco Taylor and Dr. John.
Wow.
Did I mention Ray Charles?
Yes, yes.
Bobby Blue Bland, Robert Cray, Fats Domino, Bonnie Raitt many times, the Pointer Sisters. You know, it's hard to say that these are strictly blues performers.
Well, no, I get that. I get that.
Cool and the Gang, Anson Funderburg, Leon Russell. I think it was Muddy Waters who said blues had a baby and they called it rock and roll.
Yeah.
So we, you know, there's a very, really no lines between blues and jazz and rock and roll and the whole spectrum.
Now, so, I was reading in your list of people that you had play there, some of the other genres of music, and yeah. You had Garth Brooks playing there. At what point was Garth there? Was it early on?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I'd have to look up and see what year it was, but it was probably mid-80s, maybe.
Okay, so he hadn't even really broken out yet.
No.
Fantastic.
Clint Black, we come over and his manager came and said, this is going to be a next big thing. And Clint Black was just a baby.
Oh, in preparation for this interview, I was lurking around the GCE website, and I love the story of how what is known now as Gulf Coast Entertainment began. Could you tell me the story of the Party Company, please?
Oh, Party Company. Well, one night at Rockefeller's, a client came up and said, you had the Four Tops at Rockefeller's, and I'd like to know if you could book them for my daughter's debutante party. And I said, well, yeah, I sure could. Hadn't thought about that end of the private party business, but it certainly opened a whole avenue for me and the rest of my career, in fact. So I started the Party Company, which was to book entertainment for private parties. And at the same time, I was catering, designing invitations, setting up the ballet, doing what they call now the event coordination. I was the original coordinator. But unfortunately, with a name like the Party Company, I would get calls in the middle of the night saying, do you have a champagne fountain you could bring over? Or even worse, like, hey, baby, you want to party, you know? So I had to change my name. And it was the music that really fascinated me and interested me and was really my passion. So Gulf Coast Entertainment seemed like the right direction to take, because obviously we're here on the Gulf Coast, and our Gulf Coast artists from blues, zydeco, rock and roll, jazz, we're steeped with it down here. So
yeah.
we have it here. We export it wherever our clients are.
Well, Susie, in all the years that you've been associated with this fine organization, is there one event that stands out to you as maybe the one you're most proud of being involved with?
Golly, Irv, that's really hard. There are so many facets to my almost 50 years in this business of booking music. I've been involved in the Houston International Festival for 10 years, booking music from all over the world, which was such an eye-opener and wonderful. We started a Houston chapter of something they have in Charlotte called Music with Friends,
okay.
Which is a subscription opportunity to bring music for a small group of people. And through that, we had Tony Bennett, and that was a special evening. I've had...
Let me jog your memory for a minute.
Okay.
It seems to me I remember hearing about a birthday party that you put together in Pebble Beach.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'd love to hear about it.
Yes. Well, wonderful. Little Birdie must have told you. A wonderful client in
I was
Houston
doing my homework.
had a surprise birthday party for her husband in Pebble Beach at their lovely golf club there, and asked us to hire Jerry Seinfeld to surprise him. And it was great. Jerry and his manager came in by private plane, and they could not have been nicer. And the production for that kind of show couldn't be easier. It's a microphone and a stool and a glass of water. So it was just a pleasure to meet him. And one of the neighbors was invited to the party, was Clint Eastwood. And Clint was making the rounds, just saying hello to the birthday boy. But all of the guests were, of course, wowed and pull out their phones and snapping pictures asking him to turn around and make a group shot and sign autographs. And I said, "Oh, Mr. Eastwood," I kind of grabbed him by the elbow, and I said, "I need to take you over here." And so I ushered him outside, and he said, "Whew, thank you so much. Thank you so much for getting me out of there." It was a little much. I mean, he was a good sport, but that was overwhelming. So that
And
was a lot of fun. That was a big one.
I loved reading about that. I actually was on your page reading the interview portion on there, in the blog, and I saw that, and I just had to have that story told because it was really cool. But there's another neat little story on there about James Taylor, and I would love to have you share that one as well.
James Taylor. Well, I can't remember what the story was,
Something about a
but
cell phone. How's that?
oh yeah, that's a good point. We've had the pleasure of booking the Astros Foundation slash New Hope Housing Gala for many years, and the first year was really got off to a great start, where we hired James Taylor and his band to play center field, the
Wow.
Astros home stadium, Minute Maid Park.
Yeah.
And it was a great show, and people were loving it, and on the dance floor, and everybody was taking pictures, of course, of the band with their cell phones. Then, as I recall, he whipped out his, or maybe the one of his band members whipped out their cell phone, his cell phone, and was filming. You have to remind me, because I haven't thought of the
There was
story in
a
a while.
there was a gentleman down front that had a cell phone, and the band member took the cell phone from him.
That's what it was,
Yeah.
and filmed James and the audience, I think.
It was really cool because he was walking around and he was getting close-up shots of all the band members, and they were right into it. Even had a couple of the bandmates jump up there real quick, on the camera, and then he got some shots of the audience and then walked back and gave the phone back to him. I mean, that was such a cool thing,
Was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now
We had
in, go ahead, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, just I was thinking of the other people on the gala. We had Diana Ross, and the next year, I think, and Earth, Wind, and Fire, and Gladys Knight, and Kool and the Gang, and we've had a lot of fun people at that show, at that
Yeah.
gala.
In 2016, this piece that I was reading about you reported you'd been married at that time to Sanford for 45 years, two incredibly beautiful daughters, and at that time, three grandsons. Now, I also see that you've apparently retired along the way somewhat. How about an update?
Well, I'd like to say I retired, but honestly, I can't imagine what I'd do if I weren't working. I just love this business, and I'm partners now, minority partner, with my daughter, who's running the business, Annie, and she is really taking it to another level, and it's joy to watch her expand the business dramatically and have the opportunity to book a number of new national artists and new headliners for her age group, who now are the CEOs of companies and making these big decisions. So it's really exciting to watch her. I'd like to think I'm a little used to her from time to time.
Well, that's good. That's good. Now, for those wanting to learn
And
more
by the
about,
way,
oh, go ahead.
we have four grandchildren now. We have two daughters, and our daughter in New York has two boys, and Annie here has the third grandson, and now a little granddaughter. So finally have a granddaughter I can shop and play and go get a mani-pedi with.
Well, I'll tell you what, I just became a grandfather about a year and a half ago, and I absolutely love it, man. I never thought
it's
I could
fun,
be more
isn't
in
it?
Love. Yeah, I was seeing that little guy every day or every chance that I get to. I get pictures all the time, and he's just so much fun. Absolutely. For those wanting to learn more about Gulf Coast Entertainment and all the wonderful services that that company provides, let's tell them where they can go get that information, shall we?
Oh, thank you so much, Herb. Our website is gulfcoastentertainment.com, and we're here in Houston, Texas. Call us anytime. We never close. 713-523-7004.
All right, and we will make sure to put a link on the episode so that people can go directly to it. And Susie Kreiner, I want to thank you so much for your time today. I genuinely appreciate the stories that you've shared with us, and I couldn't be more happy. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Herb. It's an honor for me to be invited on your program. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to hearing more. And if you hear somebody following you, it's probably me.
Sounds good. We're always looking for more subscribers. Now, before we end this episode, please allow me to tell you about the Killer Blues Headstone Project. Founded in 2008, Stephen Salter made it his mission to see that blues musicians did not rest in unmarked graves. The result? More than 170 headstones have been placed in 16 states. But Stephen's work continues, and Killer Blues is a registered 501c3. So please consider making a tax-deductible donation today. A link for that information section will be posted on this podcast channel, and I thank you so much for your consideration. And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to our guest, Gulf Coast Entertainment founder and owner, Susie Kreiner, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you that keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues, one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.